Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
We are on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, you sit down today, and I know not to expect any gloom and doom from what happened this past Saturday against West Virginia. You don't have any of that today.
No. You listen to the Sunday show, I can tell.
I heard you're open.
That was the open.
Doug will not sound like me in the second half of that game when I was in that stadium. That's what we're saying.
No, gloom and doom doesn't do any good. It's, you know, the first ball game, and I would have said something similar, I think, if they had won, you know, big or won at all. 1 point would have been maybe a tie going into overtime would have been almost like a win. First ball game. I know we're going to get into some of the things. There are certainly some areas where Tennessee, I think, will show significant improvement. There's other areas where there's probably just not the people, the time, and a lot of other things to get a whole lot better in. So that's going to be the challenge going forward. The way I looked at this ball game was the way I always looked at a game when I was coaching. It was an identify game. You identify this first ball game. One of the good things, if there is a good thing about playing a really good team early in the year, and sometimes, you know, if you're a team that's pretty good yourself, that's okay. But Tennessee had a lot of questions going in. We all know about the new coaching staff, all that. But you identify some things, and I'm sure that Coach Pruitt and his staff have identified several things that they need to work on, and also identified some things that they just aren't not going to be able to do from a play calling standpoint, both offense and defense. Maybe some things in the kicking game, because West Virginia, number one, they weren't significantly better. That's a little overstatement. They were better. I thought they were going to be good on offense. They were really good, and they were better on defense than they thought. Now I'm not sure. Maybe Tennessee certainly helped them a little bit. I think Tennessee's offense a little bit, but they were a good football team. They were a better team than I thought they would be. I'd watched a lot of tape on them from last year, and in this one ball game, they showed, I think, significant improvement. Showed that I think they're gonna be right in the middle of a lot of games. They're gonna be able to score points on a lot of people because of that quarterback who is extremely talented. And I mean, he got great pocket presence. You can just tell he knows where to go with the ball. You're not going to confuse him much. And then they got at least three wide receivers that they know what they're doing. They know the routes to run, and it was impressive from that standpoint.
Well, let's start with the bad, and then move on to some of the positive takeaways you had from this game defensively. Kongbo, Abernathy, Taylor, some of the more veteran players there, do you continue to stick with them, or do you start to get younger guys involved just to see what you have there? And is that an area where you can improve as the year goes on?
Well, first off, of the 11 starters and a couple of backups that came in the game, to me, and just, again, not grading it, but watching it, I thought only two players I thought played well. I thought Shy Tuttle played exceptionally well. He looked good, and you can see at that nose position, he's going to give some folks some trouble. I thought Alante Taylor played very well. The rest of the other 9, 10, 11, however many there were that got in there, not so much. I thought Kirkland Jr. played pretty good. Batuli maybe, but really everybody else did not play very well. And certainly, Chad, you have to believe going into the year, Kongbo's got to be a playmaker for you. He had one assist. Now, I don't know what the official, you know, coaches sometimes change some of those things, but I didn't hear his name mentioned. And then Warrior did not play as well as I think he would have hoped to play. Some of his things, they're on the touchdown pass, that was just a great throw. He was in good position, good coverage. That was a great throw and a great catch. But those are guys that are going to have to make plays for you. And they didn't make any plays in this game, and that's one reason why they got beat 40-14.
Do you continue to go with that same plan with those guys, or do you start to work in other players, knowing that you're not going to see many offenses as good as West Virginia, especially the next 2 weeks? Is this kind of an experimental time now for the Tennessee coaches in terms of who they play?
No, I don't think so. I think they know after this ball game who probably can't play, and three of them in the secondary can't play. There's a reason why number three didn't start, and Alante Taylor did. Alante Taylor's good. Number three's not. 22, I don't think, can play in this league in this defense. And 28 can't play in this league, in my opinion. All opinion. And so they're going to find people for them. They got people there. They're young. And I think four guys in particular are going to get a really good look this week and probably get a lot of good playing time. Certainly Alante Taylor, he's established himself as he's the best defensive back they got right now. And I think Flowers, you know, he was put in some tough situations, didn't know how to handle a couple of things because he just hadn't been there. It wasn't a matter of not having the athletic ability. He just was out of position on that particular cat stunt. Where
like technique issues?
Yeah, just really kind of knowing, okay, what are they probably going to throw on this? When you bring a corner blitz, a cat stunt, West Virginia picked that up. Number one, that is a run stunt. You're running a cat, a corner blitz, from usually the short side of the field. You're doing that on a run. They either had a pass call or saw it or whatever. And again, that was an outstanding quarterback picking it up. But he didn't, you know, on that, you have to take away the deep stuff. And if they throw a pass into that, you know, okay, maybe they get 10 yards, you get them on the ground. They made a good play against a bad call. Or not a bad call, but a call that didn't work. And then the other two, I think Theo Jackson has to get a good look. He has the athletic ability. The thing that number 22 doesn't have, that Abernathy doesn't have, he can't run. And when you can't run, you better be really, really, really good. And he's probably just good. Theo Jackson, there's some reason why he, you know, obviously he hadn't done what they wanted him to do, but I think he's got to get a good look. I think Bryce Thompson is going to continue to get a good look. He has a lot of ability there. And then I would think they'd probably take a good look at Kenneth George, the junior college player that came in the secondary. Rest of the areas, a couple of guys up front, probably going to look Kingston Harris up front. You know, I think Gooden will get a good look. But linebackers are pretty, I think, well set at. And, you know, you're going to go Kongbo and Taylor have shown what they can do. They just didn't play very well in this game.
Doug, you mentioned some of the athletic ability in the secondary, and we'll get to recruiting and how they're addressing it moving forward. But for this year in particular, defending the takeoff route based on speed could be an issue. Aside from just playing off the ball and off the line, what else can you do technique-wise to counteract the issues that they may face?
Well, just experience. Listen, there's been plenty of times. Anytime a wide receiver is faster than your defensive back, and you could have a 4-4 defensive back, but if a wide receiver runs 4-2, which not many can, but if they do, you have to know how to play that a little bit. So you can get better at that. What complicates things for Tennessee is, and this is what Coach Pruitt is looking at as a defensive play caller and coordinator, he is building this program around a style of defensive football that is a must, that you be able to play pressure and press man out on the corners. He's only got one of those guys right now. That's Alante Taylor. So I'm sure he's looking at, you know, we can't go all zone. We're not good enough up front pressure wise. We tried rushing four, couldn't get there. Now let me say this about that. And I've kind of overanalyzed this, and I think other people who are not coaches overanalyze it too. All of last year, in 13 ball games, West Virginia only had 17 sacks. That's not even 1.5 games. So pressure getting them, getting sacks wasn't a big deal. I mean, you're not going to get them, all right? But
Tennessee actually got two. Which
they got
more
two.
Than their average
one
year
was
ago.
Kind of a team sack, and that's right. But I think the more probably thing that the area that probably concerns Coach Pruitt is the fact they didn't get much push up front. Not that you're going to get sacks, but you want that quarterback to have to move around a little bit. They did that a little. But the problem is when you try to rush five or six, that makes you play man coverage back in the back, and in some instances pure man, and are we good enough to do that? So That's what's going to be looked at there, I'm sure.
What did you think about Jeremy Pruitt? Just sideline demeanor and what you saw from him as a head coach.
Well, number one, I like him a lot, so that has a little bit to do with it. I thought a couple of things about him, and this is where, you know, occasionally he'll talk a little bit about his high school experience. I think I'll get to the demeanor in just a second, but the way he talked about his team afterwards, it was sounded like a high school coach to me from this standpoint. I'm saying this on a positive standpoint. You know, there wasn't any blaming anybody. There wasn't any pointing any fingers. He's really kind of done what he did before the season. You know, rarely did he mention players by name before the season. He would talk about positions and units and things like that. Did that after the game, too. In the right way, said that I've got to do a better job. I think he meant that as a head coach and as a defensive play caller. Offensively, we got to do a better job. We got some areas we need to work on, a good number of them. But again, I think he's using it as an identify game also. I thought he handled it very well. And then game time, about what I expected. You know, he's not going to get into hollering at officials. He's not going to get into screaming. You know, I think he'll be a lot like some of the guys he's worked for. If he gets on a player, it's going to be because something stupid like jumping off sides on an extra point, I mean a field goal, or getting a motion penalty on the 8-yard line. You know, that's one thing about this ball game. It was a going to be a lopsided game anyway. But you just look at two instances. You're playing your guts out there, trying to just to stay in a game. You got a guy jump off sides on a field goal that was missed, that turns up being a touchdown. You're going to get the ball back there, and he just jumps off sides. And I noticed after the game or after that play, he probably won't be back in that in a game in the near future. And then you're down in, you got first and 10 on the 8. And again, these would not have changed the outcome of the game, but you're down on the 8-yard line. You're running the ball pretty well. Your running game's going. You got first and 8. You have a motion penalty. Now it's first and 13. You can't run the ball two or three times now in all likelihood. So that I think those are the things that he needs to get cleaned up. There was a lot of positives in this ball game if you want to just drill down into it. No turnovers. That bodes well for the future, and really nothing close to a turnover, really. You know, there's not many. But there's some positives that came out of this ball game also.
Well, and after the game, this is what jumped out to me. He gave a specific example. He was talking about critical errors, and he brought up a few. And he said, I'll give you an example of my critical error. And it wasn't milking the clock on the punt that led to the last second field goal at the end of the first half to make it 13-7. That was refreshing to hear a coach give you a specific example of where they screwed up and not make excuses about it. Not get defensive about it, just come out and say it. Hey, that was dumb of me to punt it with 25 seconds on the play clock.
Well, I think you all know this. I know John does. I do not listen after a ball game. I do not listen to coaches' shows, any talk, any analysis of it, because for Big Orange Sunday, I want to have my own thoughts
right
in there. So sometimes there's some things that said that I don't hear. I do try to listen to it after I do the show, but I want to have all, you know, this is what I saw. This is what my thoughts are. I don't want to have it kind of colored by what maybe somebody else says. But that's what I think you're going to get with this guy. He's a, you know, he's a football coach. He knows what it takes to win. He knows where this team is right now. He knows that they're going to have to play really well and make excellent decisions. I thought, you know, how about the very first call of your tough call of your head coaching career, you go for it on fourth down instead of kick a field goal.
What did that tell you?
Well, it told me a couple things. Number one, he knew he needed touchdowns to win, number one. And then secondly, I think he was right there trying to set, let his team know, listen, we're going to play these games to win. I want to go to one play, and it's the opening play of the game, and just kind of try to clarify from a coaching perspective what happened on that play. There is no doubt in my mind that the first play of a game for essentially five or six new players. Listen, Tennessee's offensive line, if you count the tight end, Wood Anderson, four of those six guys weren't there for spring practice. So they had not had much time, you know, certainly game-type time to work together. The very first play was a running play that was called. Everybody's saying some things about Brandon Kennedy. Well, he was blocking a running play where he was going to scoop. Now, somebody, probably the backside guard, was supposed to do it also. But what happened was they didn't. I'm sure one of their lessons is, listen, first play of the game, when we call a running play, I don't care if they got 14 guys lined up in the hole, run the play. We want to get started on the right foot. I know he wanted to set the tempo in this offensive staff. Is, listen, we're going to run the football. You start out with a play that blows up in your face. And, I mean, fortunate, 84 got on the ball. That could have been a turnover right there. That was an excellent play by him. So now you're second and 20. You know, in the first game you got going with a new quarterback and new, so that's I think that's a learning lesson for him there. What happened on that was the quarterback had a read on it, which is part of the play. It's an either or play. We're going to run the ball. They were going to run it to the left side. I don't know what type of play, the I formation, or you throw it out to a wide receiver and let him run with it. Well, he decided to go with the latter. Everybody else was doing the former, and that nose guard hit him. And, you know, you can do that from back in the gun position and get it off. You can't do it from under the center. Learning experience, learning for this offensive staff. We used to have the exact same thing when I was on the offensive staff at Tennessee, and we just simply put a stay call with it. You know, our off-tackle play was 6 and 7. 6 stay, you know. If we didn't call that and the quarterback saw something out there, he would go with it. So I'm sure that's one of the lessons. Hey, we're going to line up and we're going to run the first play of the ball game just to kind of set the tempo.
Yeah, there was another instance where first and goal at the one, Tim Jordan gets down, almost scores a touchdown on a long run. They decide to run it against everyone. I mean, they've got all their guys in the line of scrimmage. West Virginia, they lose 4 yards. So then it's second and goal from the 5. They eventually get it on the 4th down. But that was an illustration of being really stubborn with the run call no matter what, and it backfired. The offensive line did not have a very good first half, but it did get better as the game went on. Jeremy Pruitt talked about continuity, and you mentioned all the guys that weren't there for spring that started in this game on the offensive line. How much better can that get?
Oh, it's gonna
get from game to game.
It's going to get a good bit better. I think offensively, this team has a excellent opportunity of being a very good offense. First off, let's start with the quarterback. Jared Garantano played really, really well, showed great poise. Listen, he got his butt knocked off about 3 times those first couple of series. And I can just
on a go route, he got hit harder than I've ever seen anyone on a go route immediately.
Well, I can just tell you this, from playing and then coaching, when a team, and this includes the coaches, when you see your quarterback get hit like he got hit and get up off that ground, bounce up off that ground, That really builds a lot of trust in that quarterback. That's a plus to take out of this game. But wide receivers, Tennessee's going to be fine at wide receivers. Running backs, Tennessee's going to be fine at running back. Going to be fine at quarterback, going to be fine at tight end. What they got to get going is they got to get that continuity going, and they're good enough up front. They're a zone-blocking team. That means you have to have if one guy steps with his left foot, at a 45-degree angle, everybody has to. And that just takes time working together, and I think that will be a huge emphasis on this ETSU game Saturday.
Adam is first up today for Doug Matthews. Hey, Adam.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Coach, my question is about how you balance, as a coach, the need to get a lot of our young players, especially in the defensive backfield, reps and game reps, meaningful reps where they can hit and, you know, make mistakes, but also, you know, keep them healthy for that SEC gauntlet that's coming up in a couple weeks. You know, do you see, Alante Taylor and Trayvon Flowers, you know, playing into the third quarter on these next 2 Saturdays, or do you see them, you know, resting them a little bit so they don't get injured and can be out there for Florida, Georgia? Thanks.
Well, that's a great question. Let's take this back to 2 days, or not 2 days. I don't have those anymore. Preseason practice. I was at a couple of practices with Coach Fulmer sitting there talking. We talked about how the old days when you had 2 days and we used to hit a lot. That's changed a lot now. One thing that Coach Pruitt did that was really, really smart, and another plus, I think, coming out of this game, I don't think there was anybody injured, you know, from a serious standpoint. Ty Chandler certainly had a, it sounds like a concussion type problem there, but that's may hold him out of this game. That's not going to be a long term. But to do that, you have to decide, are we going to hit a lot? And if we do hit a lot, and I'm talking about full speed hitting, taking them to the ground, coming off the ball, offense and defense, you're probably going to get a couple of guys hurt. Coach Pruitt decided not to do that. But when you do that, is there's a downside to it in that you're not full speed ready. Your defensive line is not quite get as down low as they would be, your offensive line. So that's a give and take. I think he made the right decision on it because this is a young football team. You have the same problem during season. There's two problems from the defensive standpoint, and I can tell you this from coordinating that side of the ball. It is difficult to improve tackling without going full speed. You can do all the dummy you want to. You can get up, break down, do all the technique things. But the only way you get better at tackling is tackling, full speed tackling. And I don't know a head coach in America that's going to let his defensive coordinator go full speed tackling. So that's a concern. And to answer your question, I would anticipate all of those young guys, and there's probably seven or eight, are going to play significant snaps because he knows he's got 2 weeks to get ready for Florida. And there can be great, immense improvement in 2 weeks. So I expect to see that offensive line or the guy they think is going to be playing. I don't think there's going to be many people playing in this ball game in these next two games. Maybe late in the fourth quarter, regardless of score, I think he's going to work on this. And we got to get our, whatever our rotation is, if it's 7-8 offensive linemen, that's who's going to play. If it's 3-4 running backs, that's who's going to play. Defensive backs, these young guys, we got to get them ready because here's what he knows. He would not say this, but any coach at his level knows this. He knows the three or four guys on the defensive side of the ball that are playing that he can't beat Florida with. And he knows a couple of guys on offense that he can't beat Florida with. So that's his mindset, I would think, and his job these next 2 weeks. I'm going to get these young guys who have some time. I'll give you a great example. Theo Jackson. Theo Jackson is a tremendous athlete who can run. Now, there's a reason why he didn't start. He wasn't good enough. Didn't do what he needed to do. But if you're just looking at him and 22 is going to have a hard time beating that Florida. And forget about the rest of them. So you almost have to put him in there unless there's just something horrible about him. You got to almost put him in there. And Coach Pruitt knows he's a secondary coach by trade. He knows that. I think I mentioned last week I thought they would go with some older veteran players in this first ball game. I would be very surprised if probably 7, 8, 9 of these young guys don't get a lot of good looks and opportunities this week.
Doug Matthews, we're on the road, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Doug, we come in on a Monday, Chad and I, and we would go back and forth on what we thought we were going to see on the previous Saturday and what should have been mop-up duty against opponent X in a week like this for Tennessee. And Butch Jones, for whatever reason, we didn't see those types of players get developed in the second half of ball games the way we thought we would. Will Pruitt have a different approach?
I think he will, only with players that he feels like are going to be contributors again when Florida gets here. I think you're going to see a big number of plays for some of those young Kingston Harris, for his example. Guy's going to probably be in the defensive rotation somewhere, defensive front. I'm sure he's going to get good looks. Emmett Gooden. I think he'll get some really good looks because those are guys who are going to have to play. Now, you always have this. I guess a two-edged sword would be the way to put it. Guys who are out there busting their butt, you want to get them in games. You really do. I got myself in trouble more often than not by saying you're going to play this week, and then we didn't play them. You know, and then you go in after the locker room, and they're upset, and they should be upset. My sense on this is, listen, this guy, he knows what he has to have when Florida gets here. Kind of retooling what I said a while ago. But so I think he's going to work with those guys, and maybe he'll get some of the younger guys in there just to say thanks. But I don't think so, because that's what's important now is getting the players that are going to be playing when Florida gets here ready to at least know what they're going to do?
This is a need versus want question, but do you need to see Keller Christ? My answer would be no. Jarrett Garantano is the quarterback. Do I want to see him play? My answer is yes, because Jarrett Garantano, if he takes the hits he took on Saturday, is not going to make it through September, let alone this big stretch of SEC games coming up.
Well, I think you're going to see the offensive style. That was one of the things on that first play. How much more safe can you get than having a tight end, a fullback, and an I'm a formation, and run a safe play? You know,
yeah.
And then you get your quarterback, you know, get his teeth almost knocked out. I'm guessing here, I think Keller Christ understands. Listen, he grew up in a coaching family. He understands the situation now. He saw what happened out there. He'll be ready to play, I'm sure. Wants to be a coach and may get some playing time. I probably will get some playing time, but it's pretty clear right now who the starting quarterback is at, two places. Pretty close who it is. pretty good idea who is Tennessee, and I think we all know who it's going to be down at Alabama.
What'd you think of the way Saban responded to that question postgame, Maria Taylor?
Oh, I don't know. Let me just say this.
Okay.
I would like to see Nick Saban do that. He's the only guy in America that can do this as a head football coach in college. I'd like him to say, listen, I'm not going to take another question pregame. I'm not going to take another question at halftime, and I ain't going to talk to anybody after the game. Like it or not like it, I ain't going to do it because there's dumb questions. And that was a dumb question. Was it a question that was okay to ask? Yeah, but it was a dumb question. Of all the things, if I'm a sideline reporter there, I'm not going to bring that subject up. You know what you're going to get with that. I'd ask. The question I wanted to ask is, hey, your secondary young secondary, seemed to really play well in this game. What did you see? Ask a question of the guy who, you know, everybody knows his demeanor. Ask a question of the guy that you're going to get a substantive answer that maybe the people listening can get something out of. Don't ask a question that you know. If he does answer, you know, he's not going to tell you anything, and he's probably going to be a little bit irate. And you know what? I don't blame him. Was it appropriate? I'm sure what happened was, I don't know what happened. I imagine that his wife, after the game, said, Nick, you need to think about apologizing for that because you kind of look silly on that thing. And I'm sure he probably said, Miss Terry, you're probably right.
I think, ma'am.
I can promise you this. There wasn't no athletic director that came in and told him to do it.
No. I'm with you. This is someone who is a sideline reporter. I'm with you on those interviews with the coaches. They're worthless.
I never listen to them.
You get nothing out of them.
Now, I will say this. In the pros, college is just, there's not any of them to me. And it doesn't have anything to do with the person doing it. But In pros, there's some people in pros that particularly pregame that tell you something
every now and then.
Tell me something as watch. I don't really care about after a ball game why so and so didn't play. Tell me what happened during the game. Give me a little insight into that.
I think the postgame interview is what is most relevant. That pregame interview where they pull them out of the huddle before kickoff. The coach wants to do anything but talk to a reporter in that instance. And same thing with halftime. They're wanting to get into halftime, get into the locker room, especially in the pros with the 12-minute halftime, get in there and make adjustments and get guys ready. And I don't fault the coaches for hating
it. I got Bob Wilton's cell phone number. I'm going to text Bob and say, hey, just pass this along to Coach Saban. Tell them just to boycott. let's boycott pre, half, and post game comments. I don't think Bob will probably go to him on that. He's probably got more important things to do.
Coach, what'd you think?
He may get a comment like
Maria did.
Maria Taylor got on.
Stop asking. So quit asking.
Yes.
What did you think of LSU? Their performance, have they maybe found themselves a quarterback?
Let me tell you, here's the impressive thing about that ball game. Joe Burrow only threw for 46%. He was 11 for 24. Now, normally you would look at that and say, my gosh. But it was an effective 46%. And I think anybody that watched that game, I can tell you any SEC team that watched that game is saying, hey, if they can get that type of production offensively and defensively without much of a passing game at all. And he made some key throws now. But all of a sudden, the SEC West, which was pretty darn tough, got suddenly tougher. They were, and of the teams that played somebody who was good.
Yeah.
There were a lot of impressive games. But, you know, when you're playing Charleston Southern, you know. But they played what we think is a pretty good football team, and they beat them to death. Impressive on that. I thought just some, and I'm just going to mention the quarterbacks that played teams. You know, Vanderbilt, Missouri, they played teams that, you know, the quarterback should look good in. But Ole Miss, Jordan Tamu, I thought looked really impressive. Hey, I don't know if they're maybe that's why Shea Patterson went to Michigan. I thought, of course, Tua at Alabama. What can you say about it? I thought Jared Gontano looked good. And I'm talking about people that played good, tough opponents. There are other quarterbacks that played very, very well, but you would kind of expect them to that. You know, one thing, a kind of interesting stat, 14 opening games for the SEC, there are only two interceptions thrown, and both of them were by Kentucky. So 13 of the 14 teams playing multiple quarterbacks in some instances only had two interceptions. Pretty darn good.
Let's go to Dale, who is next up for Doug Matthews. We are on the road with Doug, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Hey, Dale.
Yeah, hey, Coach. I just wanted to see what the status was with Ty Chandler and the status on Trey Smith and Chance Hall also. And do you think the offense might switch up to maybe a little bit of pro style and try to get out of that shotgun formation?
I think that was probably the plan, yes, for going into the season. I think we're going to see a good amount. I don't know if it'll be the majority under center. Some of a true fullback in there. I think we'll probably see Blakely a little bit more in this ball game at an eye fullback, because that's one of the things they want to get done. But they're also going to run a good bit of pro style too. So I don't know right now if they're probably trying to decide exactly what they're going to try to do. And again, I'm looking from Florida on. My guess is that they'll try to do a little bit of everything, give you a few different looks you have to get ready for. I would still think the majority of the time they'll probably be back in some type of gun position on that.
He asked about Ty Chandler. Tennessee lost another running back, Trey Coleman, yesterday. What do you make of that decision? And I guess the word is with Ty Chandler, indefinitely out. It looked like a concussion on Saturday.
Yeah, that's one of those, any medical situation, whatever it is, inflamed toenail, whatever it is, but certainly a concussion. And I don't even know if they said it's a concussion, but if you looked at the way he got hit with that knee and his head jerking back, you would have to think that that's what it was. They can't really talk about that. My guess is that if there is any question, he will not play. And if he's fully cleared, they'll probably play him some, because they want to get that three rotation, at least three players rotation. Three running backs. And it looks to me like they got at least three with Ty healthy that's going to give you different options. He gives you a different option than Banks does and that Jordan does and even that, and even London does.
I was impressed by Jordan.
And the young man that left, I think that's just purely, saw he wasn't going to play. A couple of injuries. Just think about this. Nathan Peterman wasn't going to play, left. Well, he's starting for the Bills now. You know, think about that.
Yeah.
And then
Riley Ferguson.
Alvin Kamara. He wasn't playing at Alabama. He went to junior college, and now look what he's done in the pros. So leaving sometimes not a bad thing. I don't think that's they probably left with his blessing. I'm a little bit surprised that maybe he can still go to get in school somewhere. I don't know. But I thought maybe he'd want to stay around just for the strength and conditioning part of it. But anyway, he's from Louisiana, I think.
Doug, game of the week this week, Texas A&M hosting Clemson on Saturday evening. I believe that's a 6:00 central start on ESPN down at College Station. What do you make of the Aggies this year?
Well, that first ball game, don't have the exact figure, but it's 760 yards, I think, something like that, 740, 503, I think, rushing yards. That won't happen against Clemson. This is going to be a really good matchup, though. Clemson's defensive front, one of the best two or three in America. And it looks like that A&M's going to be able to run the ball some. I was impressed with A&M. I didn't mention their quarterback because they played Northwestern State. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure which Northwestern State it was. I didn't know if it was out in the Washington area, but I think it was in, I don't know if it's Texas. There's one
Louisiana.
In
Louisiana.
There's one in Texas, Louisiana. I think one in Louisiana, and there's a Northwestern State in Oklahoma that doesn't play football. Anyway,
it didn't matter which one it was.
No, it didn't matter which one it was, but
they were running for 500 plus on any of them.
There's not anybody in this league that doesn't think that A&M with Jimbo Fisher is going to be a major factor. This year, I don't know, but they're going to be a major factor. He's too good.
Your thoughts on Georgia, South Carolina, 2:30 CBS.
I think Georgia is, I think South Carolina is slightly overrated.
In what way? Offensively?
No, simply because the East is so bad.
Okay.
They're pick number two, not because...
They're close to Georgia, but they're above the other teams.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Now, Georgia got a lot of new players in on the defensive side of the ball. They're probably going to give up some yardage there. If you're going to get Georgia, probably best to get them early. I think Georgia's playing with a lot of confidence right now, and they're better. So, you know, you got a veteran quarterback for South Carolina. They'll probably pick up some yards. They got that good wide receiver back. His name escapes me right now. Very good player. But I still think Georgia's the class of the East without question. May lose a game, but they're still the class of the East.
Been on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Remember, booze it and lose it. Lose your license, your freedom, your life. Sponsored by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office, helping you arrive. Be sure to catch Doug this weekend. Forklift Systems Football Saturday, 9 to 11 a.m. every Saturday morning here on The Zone. Coach to Coach with Doug Matthews and Dave McGinnis. That's Saturday mornings at 11 a.m. immediately following Football Saturday. And then, of course, the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee football with the recap that you can only hear from Doug, because Doug doesn't read or listen to post-game comments. He comes in Sunday morning at 8 o'clock and gives you his thoughts. And then first segment, he intentionally goes long, like 20 minutes, because he knows that people sit in their car before going into church around 8:30-ish or so sometimes. So, Doug, we'll be listening this weekend.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you next Wednesday.